This is Thursday, March 24th, 2005, and we're here to do public hearing on agency priority lists. First thing I'll do is reopen a public hearing on House Bill 5030, the Department of Forestry, and this is carried over from yesterday's meeting of March 23rd, and if we could call the Department of Forestry forward to answer questions. Representative Shoffley and I are hoping we can get this one nailed down before too long.
Go for it, Madam Chair. I'll just follow you. Take it easy on everybody.
Ms. Jordan, can you talk to us about what we have in front of us here?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Shoffley, what I've done is I've taken the committee's prioritization up to what you completed yesterday and put it into the form. So you will be beginning at page 3, and I put it on big paper so it isn't so hard to read.
For which we're very grateful.
For all of them.
So we have actually finished with the first two pages of this, if I'm correct.
Correct.
So let's move on to the third page. And the next layer of priorities that I have here, let me just get my bearings, we're down to 24.
Number 23.
To
23? Mm-hmm. On the department's prioritization.
Okay, so we're here. Right, we're in state forest management is this next clump. So it'd be the 24th priority on the agency's list. What I'm doing, smoke management, I put down underneath of the state forest management clump. So the next ones that I've got are 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, and 31. No, it would just be to 30. And then I've drawn a line under those. No, wait a minute. That's not right because there's I've got 31 included in that group. And then I've also got 88. Oh, that's capital improvement. So I would just defer that back into the administrative piece. Okay, so it would be 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, and 31 as the next priorities. Do you have any input on that? Are you in agreement with it?
Absolutely.
I'm going with it. Okay. Okay, then I put the smoke management program, which is 23rd on your list at that point. Is that okay with you, Representative Schaffer? We're calling it good on that one then. And then I went into the nursery sector. And that took me 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58. And then I think that was the capital improvement project, which I would put down into administration. So it would just go to 58. That's the next priority.
Sounds good.
Senator Nelson, what we're doing is we're on the third page of the handout that's in front of you. The first two pages were what we did yesterday.
Okay.
And then we just went through and put the state forest management programs as the next set of priorities, which is that 24 through 32 sector.
Okay.
And then put in the smoke management program, which is 23, the one at the top of that page. And then are talking right now about all of the nursery programs, which is 44 through 58.
Okay.
As the next priority.
Good deal.
Okay. Representative Shoffler, does that work for you?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then I put all of the administrative programs in the same order that the agency had them. So I ended up with 41 below that, which is urban forestry, 43. No, wait a minute. That's not right. Yeah, that is right. 41. And marketing I had. I didn't know where to put them, so I just put them down at the very bottom. And I think 32 was another one that I missed out.
I'm going to ask a question, Madam Chair. Can you, the urban forestry part, what exactly did it do with all that money?
Good question. Madam Chair, Representative Salford, we have one full-time and parts of two other positions that work with communities to help them build up their expertise in urban forestry. So that covers part of the funding, and then whatever's left over.
Mr. Brown, could you identify yourself?
For the record, Marvin Brown, Director of Department of Forestry. Whatever money's left over after we fund that one position and parts of the other two, we issue as grants for urban tree improvement projects to communities.
Follow up on that, please. This legacy forestry money the federal government gives out, we got a pretty good, like, I think it's, I don't know if it's 90 or 100 acres of Scotters Mountain in Happy Valley. And if I had some local government folks who were interested in trying to apply for that grant money, would they call these folks to help them wade through all the bureaucracy? Well, who would they call?
Chair Morgan, Representative Chappell, we don't have the authority to implement that federal program, federal forest legacy. Mm-hmm. There's other programs, I believe, available that might.
Representative Schaffler, I suggest they call the Parks Department.
Okay. Thanks. We'll have them up here soon enough, too.
So I was scurrying around in here and missed the explanation of urban forestry. Could you cover that one more time?
Sure. Chair Morgan, we have one full-time and parts of two other positions that are funded by that federal money, and they spend most of their time working with communities to develop their capacity to do urban forestry work within the communities. We do that with programs like the Tree City USA program and Arbor Day. And then when there's money left over out of the federal grant, we usually issue that as special projects grants to communities to do urban tree improvement kinds of work, forest inventories, things like that.
So is it a program to match trees to habitat or something? Or?
It's the urban forestry program really is focused on the fact that there are forested environments in cities and communities that are important to the people there, and they also take special care for them to be healthy and well managed. They're not, you know, it's a little different taking care of a tree out in the middle of the forest than one that's on a street corner somewhere. It takes special expertise. So it's focused on the health and the well-being of those resources in the urban environment primarily. It's also, in my mind, a really good way for us to create some connections with folks who we don't normally have connections with, you know, and had that conversation in other fora before, but it's increasingly more difficult to make those connections with urban residents about the importance of natural resources, and urban forestry proves to be a way to do that pretty well. Talk about the environment where they live, and then from there you can start to talk about the importance of resources, and you know, they can understand who the Department of Forestry is and what we do beyond what we talk to them about.
But and that's so entirely federally funded.
Right now it's all federal funds. Yes.
Okay.
We have a lot of trees in my town, Happy Valley. What exactly would you do for us if we called you? What reason would you come spend money in my town? I guess that's what I'm looking for.
Chair Morgan and Representative Salfour, a typical technical assistance request would be help us develop an inventory of the trees we've got here. Once we have that inventory, we can set up a schedule of maintenance when those trees need to be reviewed for pruning and replacement, can identify spots within the community that could use trees that don't have them now, could identify perhaps that there's species that are in that are not appropriate for that particular location, and we could recommend better ones. Just overall upgrade that urban forest resource for the community.
So do you find that in the program you're consulting most with the Parks Department type folks at the city and county levels?
That would be one constituent, yeah. It'd be the public works folks or the parks folks. There's also, in most communities, a pretty core group of citizen activists who care about urban trees. And they oftentimes sit on municipal tree ordinance boards and things like that, so that you can engage with a group of citizens who have a pretty strong interest in that as well. And they will a lot of times generate volunteer efforts to raise money for more tree planting, or sponsor their own nurseries, or sponsor days for doing work. So it's also citizen groups.
And the other one that I had after I finally figured out what I was doing was the interpretive center in the Tillamook State Forest that was left over, and so I just put it down below also. And that is also not a general funded program, in my understanding.
Correct. It's not, no general funds for that program.
Okay. Does anybody have any heartburn with the way this all fell together? With that, then, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 1830, and thank you, gentlemen, for coming down to second thing on this. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 1556, which is the Parks and Recreation Department. We ask the Department to come forward and answer questions. And we'll shuffle our papers here.
What page are we on?
Twenty-six. I think I'm going to recommend some changes to this process for the next go round.
Amen.
Amen.
I bet they even agree with you. I'd like to see the price tag on this.
Thank you very much
exercise.
For joining us. To just jump right into this one, where I went with priorities was I put a high priority on functions that actually take place out on the ground. I think one of the big messages that Measure 66 sent us was that people want to see an improvement in the recreational facilities and the parks facilities that are out there. And so that was how I looked at the highest priority. And then I put the administrative functions next. And then the commission shook out, and they ended up at the bottom. So that's where I went with the thing. Does anybody want to talk about priorities?
Well, you put the director, left him at the top, but took this commission out and put him at the bottom?
The director. I knew there was something I missed out.
It was the director and the commission you put at the bottom? Look out.
You have to bear in mind that for us this is Friday.
Yes. It's been a very hard week.
I've been listening two previous days, so I know what you've gone through.
So what I did was the debt service I left on the top. because that was the instruction of the co-chairs. And then the I put the next priority as program number 3. And then I went to program 9, which is the lottery-funded facility investments. Are you needing to... Hi, Senator Davis.
I'm looking mad now, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get lunch. I make it pull back up because I'm working mid-mail today. I'm sorry. Medical malpractice issue for doctors and state. And
we're doing the Parks Department right now.
Page 26.
And in here it's page 26.
I got it. I'm there.
Oh, you got it?
Yeah, right on top.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had a conversation before this.
So debt service, and then the programs that actually have funding to them, which are 3 and 9 and 20 and 19 and 10 and 15, and that's it. That's all the funding programs.
Over those again, 3, 9, 20.
3, 9, 20, 19, 10, and 15. In no particular order.
Obviously.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
19 acquisitions. Under 66, Tim, they give you a certain amount of money per biennium to do that. It's not mandatory that you spend it for that.
For the record, my name is Tim Wood, Director of the Parks and Recreation Department. Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, that's correct. What we have in our budget in the current biennium is $7 million for acquisition, and we have that program for our 05-07 budget. What isn't spent would go carryover.
Okay. And where in your follow-up?
Yes.
Where in all of these programs is your Rocky Shore management that you take part in with DSL, LCDC?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, that's in our, that would be in our operations budget, our field operations budget.
So, field operations, the third program down, is that where you're?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Does anyone have any feelings about how we should rank these on-the-ground type programs here?
I had moved 19 down a little, though it's important. It's not something that has to be done. They got some flexibility to do it.
Okay, should we put 19 down under 15 then?
Well, if you want to put 19 under 15, it makes it higher, doesn't it?
Well, except the order is 3, 9, 20, 10, 15, 19.
I'd leave it where it is or below 19. I'd have made it 20 or 21 right now. They've got the money. It doesn't have to be spent now. If you have, it's also, that's major 66 stuff.
Which one are you?
Acquisitions, number 19.
Oh, acquisitions. 19. Okay. So move acquisitions just entirely down in the list. So it's.
I don't think I would put it to the bottom. I think I would move it down one. I'd put it down where 20 is. It may not sound like much, but I think the pass-through grants is more important.
Okay, but I'm proposing to move 20 up to.
I'd move it down to where 20 would be. If you're moving it up, the other one, there's a slot there. You can stick it in and shuffle things.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I understood something. The way I looked at this, and we talked about why we had the meeting going on was take care of your debt first.
Yeah.
Secondly, take care of your delayed maintenance, number two, and then figure out your capacity and make your acquisitions, number three, in very broad categories. That's kind of what I was thinking. I thought that's kind of what we're looking at here, but I'm not sure that...
Okay.
The Basco grant, is that maintenance?
I missed the preliminary discussion, so that's...
Okay, yeah. They have bonds out there which will be retired well before ballot measure 66 money goes away, but there is a way of accelerating it slightly and losing and gaining a little money. They've looked at that and they're going to do it. There may be $1 million in savings over 4 or 5 years. It's the wrong time to do it now. Then we look. They're on a maintenance program that will their maintenance will be completed just as the ballot measure money runs out. So that was the next priority, and then. From my thinking, was the third priority would be, besides maintaining the system so people can go and have your reservation system and stuff, is acquisition of land after you know where your capacity needs really are, and that's what they're working on. You don't want to be buying a bunch of land which is the wrong place, or buying land you don't need to buy.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Correct me. Didn't you have... That was the question, that you were doing acquisitions before you had your maintenance done, and when the money runs out of 66, that you are $7 million short of having your maintenance done?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger.
It's about between seven and eight.
On the earlier presentation where we made our program overview, that was correct. It maintained a $7 million into acquisition for the rest of the life of Measure 66, and continued funding of, I think, $21 million in facility improvements to bring that backlog down to about, I think it was $14 million or so at 2014. What we are going to talk to you about when we come back in phase two is making some adjustments to that program to put more money into the facilities improvement category to reduce this.
That's what I think we had sort of agreement on that when we were in committee earlier.
Okay.
But I think it goes along with what you're doing, too.
No. I think the committee has had a good discussion on this, and I just wasn't a part of it. So what you would do then is to put the maintenance programs under the debt service, and then put the administrative stuff, and then put acquisitions. Is that what I hear you saying?
Correct.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that acquisitions aren't extremely important. Don't get me wrong, but just trying to prioritize what we might consider most important. Take care of what you've got first. Make sure it's in good shape, because if 66 goes away, it doesn't come back.
So how would we rank these if that was to be the priority?
My problem is finding out where your maintenance is. Is that the pass-through grants?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, no, that's in the lottery-funded facility investment.
Number nine, then.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay,
so number nine would be the first priority under the debt service.
For me. That's just for me.
Okay, is there any other spending in here that relates to maintenance and modernization?
Madam Chair, that would be item three, because that's the funding for our day-to-day routine preventive maintenance and operation of the system.
Okay, so how about if we make that number three?
That would seem reasonable.
And that takes care of all the money that goes into maintenance and modernization?
Madam Chair, that's pretty much correct.
This is pretty tidy.
What about number 17, the operations engineering?
Madam Chair, that is basically staffing funding for a portion of our staff that is not lottery funded. That would be, I guess that's true. That would be a basic element of our department that we would need to have in place in order to carry out the maintenance plan.
So these are the engineers that make the projects, design the projects.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So are you okay with putting 17 next?
That's fine. Yeah. And those are just my broad views. I don't know if it's shared by everybody on this panel or not.
Well,
Wayne, do you remember that being kind of where we were going?
Yeah, except for I still think that What you're, where you were talking about moving acquisitions up?
No.
Well, no. But actually, I mean,
if you move it down, if you're talking about
it would be
your maintenance
lottery, get your maintenance taken care of, make sure you're running your park systems so people can enjoy them now, and then figure where your capacity needs are, and then that's where acquisitions come in. So it actually, in this particular case, would probably be the last thing we'd be looking at.
Okay.
And that's my broad general categories. I didn't know how to fit all this into those, but that was just me. That's not, this panel may not feel that way.
Representative Schaffner, does that fit in with your...
Yeah, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. We'll buy a bunch of stuff up if you can't take care of it.
I look
there. Nelson, you're okay. Okay, and it makes sense to me to do it that way, too.
Madam Chair, could I point out item 10, which is listed as other facilities match? That's the limitation that we put in our budget to bring in matching funds from other programs, and so that is indeed maintenance related as well.
So that's also capitalization for the maintenance and modernization.
That's
the same
category there.
So let's put that above 17. To keep it, it's where the money start.
What, I forgot, what is the pass-through grant, Madam Chair, may I ask?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, that's our local grant program where we provide grant funding for recreation programs in local communities and other jurisdictions. It's about an $8 million package in our budget.
I think that's a high priority item.
Can you give me an example of what that is?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, is sure that Bear Creek Greenway was one of the
programs. Oh, looks very important.
Boy, did he pick the right one.
Yeah, throw that camera back.
See, he knows his committee, don't he?
Yeah.
So let's put...
It was a great deal. Thank you.
Let's put number 20 underneath 10.
Oops. Hit a raw nerve there. Thank you.
Okay.
That really is federal funds. That means we have to allocate to certain limitations.
It's Measure 66.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, yeah, that's Measure 66 money.
Here's
our 66. Local grants program.
Okay.
Okay, so I've got 9.
And some of it is ATV funds as well.
The infamous ATV funds.
Okay, what's 15? Recreational programs. What are the recreational programs?
Madam Chair, that's... sort of our organizational element that runs our interpretive program, our volunteer services program, recreation trails.
So that has to do with the quality of the experience in the existing park system.
It does, Madam Chair.
Okay. You want to put that one up in that same...
That's maintaining your system.
So let's put 9, 3, 10, 20, 17, 15.
What was
it?
9, 3,
20?
I'm going to let you take care of this for us, okay?
You're going to get this.
Okay.
I am.
General principles.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Tim, do you get ATV money?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, yes. The money that we get into the ATV program comes from unrefunded gasoline taxes and registration of ATVs, and that is specifically allocated to ATV programs.
Is that in the recreational?
No, that is in the pass-through grants program.
It's which now?
Pass-through.
Pass-through.
Okay. And we've already ranked that. So then, would it make sense to go into the administrative functions, which appear to be the bulk of the rest of this? And would...
I'm just thinking through where that might best fall.
What money?
Administration firm.
You might want to have more discussion about this.
The State Historic Preservation Office.
As a program director for administration.
That's a good point. Item number 7 on the list, the State Historic Preservation Office. Talk to us a little bit about the program so that we're all on the same page.
Madam Chair, the State Historic Preservation Office, the funding here, some of it is federal funds. Some of it is lottery funds. The primary function of this program is to carry out the state's responsibilities with regard to the National Historic Preservation Act. That's what a lot of the federal funding comes for. properties for the National Historic Register and managing those in the Historic Landmark Program. Also, for archaeology, the archaeology responsibilities that the state has under statute for ensuring archaeological resources of the state are accounted for and protected. And administration of some other preservation programs, such as the special tax assessment for historic properties, and that's primarily what its responsibilities relate to.
So, committee, do you think that it makes sense to put that program in with the maintenance and modernization and just taking care of the system roofing?
You could. They've got 22 small programs here. No general fund dollars.
There's no general fund in this agency at all.
Yeah. It seems like an effort and futility.
They're lucky.
Okay, let's put program number 7, the next priority on the list. And then in terms of the rest of the management, the rest, what we've got left basically are the administrative functions. The two commissions, I think, seven. No, we got one, just the Heritage Commission. And the acquisition program. Oh, the director's office and the that commission. Okay. Would the committee be okay with just taking the remaining functions of the agency, with the exception of acquisition, and just ranking them in the same order that they're here?
I wouldn't have a problem doing that when we started.
I'll take that as a yes. And then put acquisitions at the bottom of the list and call it a deal.
Yeah. Sounds good.
We're closing the public hearing on House Bill 1556, and we're opening the public hearing on House Bill 5074, the Oregon Watershed and Housing Board. Thank you very much for helping us out with this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe we're on Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, page number 27.
Okay. The IMST, we have a brand new director on our hands here, so we can really work this guy over.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, maybe I can just give a little context. I think there was some discussion in subcommittee in this department on, around their prioritization. I believe it was discussion of the importance of the grant programs relative to some of the other programs. And I think that while there was nothing specific said, that was kind of the gist of the conversations that your staff remembers.
And the other thing I noticed was that there are some constitutional pieces to this. And so I just took those two pieces and put them up at the top of the program. But I'm wondering if the director could talk to us a little bit about whether there's some constitutional and some statutory in these categories. Can you break it out a little bit for us so we can see more clearly what's constitutional and what's statutory?
Madam Chair, for the record, Tom Beiler, Director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. For the committee's information, a large part of what OEB does is operate a grant program, which is largely funded through ballot measure 66 dollars. Ballot measure 66 is a constitutional measure that was voted by the Oregon citizens in 1998 and came online in 1999. And in looking at the agency, part of what ballot measure 66 requires is one agency to operate and administer the measure 66 funds for purposes of the watershed health restoration purposes. The legislature then in 1999 designated the Oregon Watershed Health Enhancement Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board to serve those functions. So you have a combination of the creation of the funding source through the Constitution, the designation of one agency, and then some clarification by the legislature in terms of establishing the agency and setting some additional sideboards on their operation, including the creation of the board that does the grant decisions for the program.
So what I may be hearing you say is that there is no way to separate constitutional from statutory in those in the two line items.
Well, Chair Morgan,
three line items.
I can go through each item if that would be helpful, and perhaps to distinguish that as Madam Chair, if that's what you'd like. In terms of
And where I'm coming from here is we have instructions from the co-chairs to put constitutional mandates at the top of the list. We have discussion from the subcommittee to put grants before administration. And in all of the line items, there's administration. In the line items that have constitutional code attached to them, which is 1 and 3 and 8, the 1 and 8 have administrative pieces, or not, wait a minute here. Yeah, 1 and 8 have administrative management aspects to them. And so I'm just wondering if there's a way to separate the administrative functions out and put them lower down than some kind of constitutional pieces, or if that's even possible.
Chair Morgan, I'm not sure if I can clarify that a whole lot. I think that the way we viewed this in putting this together is that Measure 66 within the Constitution, it establishes the broad authority, including establishing the one agency, establishing the purposes for the funds that we would administer a grant program for administering those funds.
So the whole program is constitutional.
That's yes, Madam Chair.
Number one.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
Representative Schaffer.
In the Water Committee, I remember talking about this, and isn't it really clearly set written out where and when you can provide technical support and where and when you can provide on-the-ground support? Isn't there a separation in there somewhere? And are both of those constitutional, or is one statutory and one constitutionally?
Chair Morgan, Representative Schaffer, there is the Measure 66 does provide guidance as to how Measure 66 funds can be distributed. Some funds, at least 65% of those funds, are to be used for capital projects. These are on-the-ground restoration projects. The remainder can be used for non-capital projects, which include technical assistance, local capacity and support, education and outreach, and monitoring types of efforts.
Ma'am Chair, both those are in the Constitution, correct? Those descriptions, correct, of where the money can be spent?
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, yes, but the statutes do elaborate in further detail on the Constitution.
One more, Madam Chair, and then I'll ask. And like, for example, administrative review for management and fiscal services, would that administrative review be part of that 35% of technical, or is that something that's in the statute? And then down on the on number 8, like the broad activities, policy, legislation, legal services, attorney general's office, public information, is that statutorily put in, or is that constitutionally put in, or are they some or parts of both? That, I think that's what we're trying to get at here.
Chair Morgan, Representative Schaffler, I apologize if I think it is a bit of a combination of both, and it's I apologize if I'm not explaining it very clearly, but there is a broad the authority broadly establishing the funding for Measure 66 and the one agency. It doesn't create OWEB specifically. That was what the legislature did. But it does provide this responsibility for administering the funds. The legislature then 1999 designated OWEB as the agency to administer those funds and provided more detail to elaborate on how to responsibly administer the program and those dollars, including making sure that we have the fiscal accountability, that we have the grant program in review, that we have a board established to make the decisions on how to award those grants. So the initial authority that created OWEB is through the Constitution. There is, however, some additional guidance through the legislature that provided the more detail in how the program should operate and how it's organized.
It's like separating the fly crap from the pepper almost, I think, here. Forgive me.
Okay. Well, let me propose here that the I would propose that the highest priority be given to the grant function of this, the actual grant money.
That's what I've got talking about.
Okay, and so that would be, in my estimation, the item one, item three, and item four.
Yep.
Am I missing any other grant programs in here? I mean, is that the bulk of what goes out the door?
Madam Chair, those are the essential functions that get the grants, solicit for grants, review them, evaluate them, and award them.
Okay. And then I would propose that we take a look at the second item, which gives the watershed councils the capacity to deal with the first items. So that would be number two next on the list. And then I would go into the administrative functions of the agency, which is eight and five, the monitoring program and the administration. Okay, the R&D research and development, that should maybe go in. Well, let's just put it in next. That would work. And then that
which one's that?
What's that?
What number is that?
The last one, item nine, the research and development grant funds. We could stick those in at the bottom of the grant money. Let's do that. And then that will leave us with the Lower Columbia River Estuary and the IMST. And I would just propose that we put the Lower Columbia River Estuary and then the IMST and call it good.
I just want to make a comment. I went out and planted some trees with the Johnson Creek Watershed Council, and we're the smallest watershed council, actually, in land, but the largest in population. And it starts clear out in conservative Clackamas County, goes right through suburban and right through into the most liberal of Portland.
That's where it got polluted.
And I'll tell you, well, that may or may be true, but, you know, this agency brings people together. There were diverse people out there. There were very conservative folks out there and gay folks and all kinds of folks out there. You get people together working on something, and they get to talking and finding out that they ain't got that much different.
It brings people, exactly.
That's exactly what I'm trying
to
say.
Well, and I think all of us have very active watershed councils in the districts that we represent. And one of the interesting things is to go to a watershed council meeting and look at the diversity of people that are sitting around those tables putting projects together and making things happen. It's a very great strength
Madam Chair,
of the Oregon plan.
That is one of the things that you and I talked about in length, the need to keep the watershed councils with that diverse makeup. Because
yeah.
That's when they're going to be successful. If they start going any other direction from that, I think in time you're going to lose support.
Senator Shields.
Yes, I just wanted to say that... I can jump on this bandwagon too, because I have both Representative Schaffer's half of the district and And the northern half has the Columbia Slough. And I've spent a day in a canoe with a bunch of watershed people on that one. It's an amazing experience. I mean, it has the most challenges, everything, including Portland International Airport tries to drain into it.
Well, in a long history of kind of being a dumping ground.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
Got a lot of challenges.
And the cleanup that's occurred along it and the work that's been done is amazing.
It's
it really
amazing.
Is. It really is. But what I wanted to say was that I appreciate your ranking of these items, but I tend to return to what I said several days ago. I still do not understand this exercise from a couple perspectives. One, there's no general fund here to prioritize around. And number two, we can get our scientists to talk to their scientists any time we want, I guess. But without that, it's pretty much our subjectivity versus their subjectivity, or maybe theirs a little more objective. I mean, they're the ones that are in charge. So I just want to be on record that I like the priorities the way they had them. I mean, you listed them your way and said, let's call it good. That's fine. That's your perspective, and I just wanted to reiterate my perspective on the issue.
Any other comments? Should we call this one good? Close the public hearing on House Bill 574. Open a public hearing on House Bill 5029, which is the Department of Fish and Wildlife. This one was difficult.
I just thought it was fishy myself.
Okay.
This was difficult. It was so difficult I didn't get it completely done.
This one starts on page 28 of the original handout. And where I went with this, I spent about 2 hours stewing over this one, and I got to the place where I couldn't separate out the ESA type stuff from the economic development type stuff. It just ended up being all kind of balled together for me. So I, quite frankly, did not re-rank this, but I would be very open to committee members giving input on it.
Two things I did. I took and moved up fish screens. I thought they were more important than where they were on.
What's the number?
Let me take a look here. I had it marked down here.
15? Screens and passage.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is, to my way, meets a whole bunch of things with the Oregon plan and wild fish and, you know, if there was anything that could go up. And, of course, my own little thing about predators and what it costs for this rank clear up at 30 and the impact that it has on forestry, specifically bears. I moved that up. Everything else.
Well, wait a second. Let's deal with 15. Where would you move it to?
I put it in where 12 is and just slid everything down one.
So just insert it above 12?
Yeah, right at 12. Ask number 12 and slip 12 and the rest of them down until they come into 19.
Does anybody have any heartburn with doing that? Okay, let's go ahead and do that then. And what was the other one?
Well, we're talking about the economy.
The damage program?
And you got the predator thing over here on, is it number 30? Where they work with wildlife services. And
predator control.
Ag has a portion or a summer program. There's not a, well, there's about 200 and some thousand, but only $64,000 of it is, what do you call it, money. And also a lot of the local areas are funding their own predator people. We assess ourselves $1 an acre to help do it on our own because there isn't enough money in the program. I'm not certain that I'm interested so much in that there's more money, but that it's recognized that it's having a huge impact on one of our main industries in this state. We've sat around doing nothing about it for at least 15 years that we know that there's been a problem with bear killing trees, the tens of millions of dollars per year, not just a one-time thing. It's year after year after year. If you want to talk about something that can affect your general fund, there's something that's affected your general fund, because those trees that are killed are never cut, they never provide a job, and there's no taxes paid on them.
Okay. There is the 8th program on page 29, the wildlife damage program. Would it make sense to move the predator control program up with that one?
Which one are you looking at?
The one that's ranked as the 8th priority, the damage program.
Ray, put it in the same spot, or right? 8 and 9.
Just insert it right under that one. Is that okay, Senator Shields?
Madam Chair, could ODFNW describe the difference between these two?
Mr. Director?
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. The damage section, which is ranked as number 8, is money that comes from license and tag fees inside the agency that deals with complaints about wildlife in Oregon. For the most part, it centers itself around big game, whether it's deer and elk in a potato field, alfalfa field, all the way to deer eating someone's
apple
flowers, the rose garden, whatever, to the raccoon that gets into someone's attic. The predator control money that you see in 30 is one, general fund money that is transferred from the Department of Fish and Wildlife to Wildlife Services. And I would appreciate if everyone would note the $61,490 through a technical adjustment. And Mr. Siebert, please correct me if I'm wrong. I think that should be about $120,000 through some technical adjustments rather than the $61,000 that is represented on this sheet. There's been a technical adjustment since this printout was made. The $150,000, let me back up. The general fund money is primarily to assist Wildlife Services with predator-type controls, such as coyotes. The $150,000 that you see under other fund in the predator control program is money that goes to Wildlife Services for assistance with bear and cougar complaints that we receive.
Is that follow-up, Senator Shields?
Yeah. I followed you on the coyotes. Then what did you say about the...
The $150,000 that you see under predator control... That is other fund monies. That money is generally focused on bear and cougar complaints and damage.
What's the source of that?
That is license and tag monies.
Okay.
Other fund monies is license and tag. The general fund money is directed towards predator controls such as coyotes.
I guess I would have a follow-up.
Yes.
Since there seems to be some relationship, I'm not sure how much, between the two, and since obviously the one is much larger than the other, $934,000 as opposed to a couple hundred thousand, how did you arrive at ranking 1/8 and 1/30?
Chair Morgan, Senator Shields, the money that is listed under predator control is contract money that goes out to Wildlife Services, and the money that is under damage control is other fund money that goes within program of big game management. We have a lot more complaint of big game animals impacting different agricultural crops, etc.
Follow up, Madam Chair. So the one kind of objective criteria you have is response to public outcry, and you're saying that you get a lot more outcry on this 8th ranked one, the damage one, than you do on number 30, the predator control.
Well, Mr. Director, is there not also an aspect to the predator control where the funding source comes from several different places but ends up primarily at the county level, and that the control aspect of it, rather than being inside the department, is in each individual county?
Chair Morgan, that is correct. Whereas we may be able to, under the damage section, we may be able to create a damage hunt or a special master hunter program under landowner preference tags scenario, where those problems can be alleviated by the public with an opportunity to hunt. Under the predator control section, that's where Wildlife Services is employed to remove the offending animal.
I would hesitate to say, Senator Shields, that the importance of these programs would be based on the number of complaints that are received, because for those of us that live out in the rural areas, coyotes are an east side kind of a thing, although they're, you know, kind of moving into the western part too. But bears and cougars I get a lot of calls from constituents in my district, particularly about bears and cougars, because that's predominantly what there is in my area. But we've got a lot of control issues in southwest Oregon around bears and cougars.
I understand what you're saying, Madam Chair. I was just suggesting, and Lindsay didn't answer my question, kind of had a second question of yours put on top of the one that I had just asked. I simply said that one statistical, therefore objective criteria you do have to work with is the number of phone calls you get. Is that not true? And I'm trying to determine, do you get more phone calls on number 8 or number 30?
Chair Morgan and Senator Shields, there are more complaints respective of game mammals and other nuisance type animals rather than predators, bear and cougar. That is true, just simply because there's more of them. And those complaints range anywhere from geese in the Willamette Valley to cougar in northeast Oregon. And so it becomes very diverse very quickly, and the number of conflicts that are created by the diversity of species are much greater rather than focusing in on bear and cougar and coyotes per se.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Just to follow up, under number 30, that's with the federal government. They use a federal trapper in a lot of areas. That's really not the Department of Fish and Wildlife, it's the federal trapper. I don't know why I have that in the back of my mind.
Chair Morgan, Senator Nelson, you are correct. The number 30 ranking, that's predator control, is contracting with Wildlife Services.
It's a federal, basically a federal trapper.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a discussion of what Wildlife Services is would be helpful.
Wildlife Services is, Chair Morgan, Wildlife Services is a department within the U.S. Department of Agriculture that deals with animal control damage in the state of Oregon. They provide contract services with counties who participate in the cost share. They will respond to our requests under our contracts in some areas where there is not a county cost share agreement with a government trapper in that local area. But the cost share agreement responds to primarily people in agriculture and timber industries where they have an offending animal. And then Wildlife Services will assess the situation and then target that offending animal for removal.
Representative Krieger was next.
And
that was assuming you're done. Okay.
I find it interesting. Of course, we've had the conversation before. We're spending $270,000 to control something that we could have people paying money to the agency that would be more than willing to go out and hunt them with a dog and relieve us of our problem and generate another $1 million for the agency.
Madam Chair, that's what I was going to say, Mr. Director. Wouldn't it be cheaper and more effective just to let the landowner go out and hunt and trap these critters rather than spending a bunch of money on government people out there doing that?
Chair Morgan, Representative Schaffer, there's two issues at hand here.
I'm sure there are.
One, the with respect to bears and cougars, the landowner can do that now. If he's suffering damage, they can remove those animals that are offending the private property. Secondly, with respect to the hunting season, we've allowed quite an open-ended opportunity for cougar and bear harvest in the state, particularly since hounds were disallowed for use while hunting bear and cougar. We've also reduced the price of a tag for a cougar from $50 down to $10 so that people can easily obtain them. We've also made them part of the sportsman pack so that when someone buys a sportsman pack, it includes a cougar tag. So there are many opportunities for sport hunting to take place and also opportunities for the landowner to take action on the offending animal. Now, the one tool, as I mentioned, the use of dogs to take bear and cougar has been lifted by two initiative petitions that came before the public, and both times that initiative petition passed prohibiting the use of dogs and bait to hunt bear and cougar. And so we are where we are today with the scenario that has played out.
And you're doing a fine job. All those things you listed off, have you seen a decrease in complaints of offending animals due to those measures taken?
Chair Morgan, Representative Schaffler, with respect to bear and cougar, we have not seen a particular decrease statewide with respect to complaints. We've seen some decrease in certain areas and then increase in other areas. And then, of course, I think one of the things that we've been experiencing statewide is that people 10 years ago were quite surprised to see a cougar in an urban or semi-urban rural area. And today, I think people are becoming more accustomed to seeing cougar and bear and just simply don't report it as they had in the past. I think it's something that where people of Oregon are becoming somewhat conditioned to that. And I can recall 30 years ago, it was quite the incident if someone saw a cougar, and it made great headlines. At that time, the population was quite low. Today, it's not uncommon for people in Oregon to see a cougar in or near a home site or an urban area.
Yeah, well, Madam Chair, we have a lot of coyotes in my town. But if the urban area gets wolves, they'll probably get that population down mighty quick. Sorry, Mr. Director.
They can't trap them. You're not supposed to chase them with dogs. So I've come up with putting bells on my grandchildren and follow my grandchildren around.
Okay, we have a request from Representative Krieger to move predator control, which is item 30 on ODFW's list, up in the list. Representative Krieger, where would you propose to put it?
I'd put it right below the other predatory thing. Number, was it 8?
Okay. Comments on that? Okay, let's go ahead and do that then. And is there any other changes that anyone wants to propose to the ranking?
Not a change to the ranking. I would like to check on number 3, state police enforcement. I see you have that as number 3 with your agency within the game division to enforce the fish and wildlife laws. And what has happened in the public safety arena of the state police budget? Are you aware of what's happened there?
Chair Morgan, Representative Krieger, currently, as I recall, the last time that I looked at that budget, there would be 24 positions cut from the Fish and Wildlife Division of the State Police as a result of federal fund, other fund, federal fund, general fund, and proposed marine board fund, federal fund, and general fund cuts. I believe that's correct. I don't think there was any cuts as a result of the transfer of money from this agency to the Department of State Police.
Did you have an enforcement lacking ability? Or do you think they would have some problems with maintaining their enforcement level adequately if they're to lose those 24th positions?
Chair Morgan, Representative Krieger, if they were to lose 24 positions in that division, they would lose a little over 20% of the enforcement personnel and staff in the division. Quite frankly, at those kinds of cuts, I don't think we could ensure compliance rates to a sufficient level across the state to maintain fish and wildlife populations at current levels. I think you would see an erosion of voluntary compliance in this state through the lack of presence and action by fish and wildlife enforcement. And I think what's most striking about this is that the Fish and Wildlife Division of the State Police is the singular enforcement arm for fish and wildlife enforcement. By cutting fish and wildlife enforcement from State Police, there is no one else to back it up in state government, county, or city governments. It is a cut to the quick.
Representative Shoffman.
Briefly, and this is going to cause the director a pain in the neck, and it's being really picky, but I can't help but comment on it. On number 28, on page 33, it's right at the top. It's about the language in this. It says, Hydro, this section implements state and federal policies associated with the management of hydropower facilities. I would have to say that for that to be a correct statement and definition of what this priority is, I'd have to say this section, at the direction of the governor, I might add, my governor, who I'll vote for again, it's the first chance I get, this section implements and advocates for state and federal policies. That's how I think they should read, because that is what I've seen in my experience. Thank you.
And if I could just go back to Representative Krieger's point on the fish and game officers in the Oregon State Police, I think that there needs to be a pretty clear and straightforward discussion that we need these officers in place and that there is no backup on this, that this is the end of the line. And part of the integrity around the ability to have fishing and hunting opportunities for people in the state of Oregon resides in our ability to make sure that we're enforcing the regulations and the people of Oregon are abiding within the guidelines for management that are set forth by the federal government and the state government. So the these officers are extremely important to having that unfold, and it's something that we need to pay a lot of attention to.
Madam Chair, there's another concept or part of this that we don't talk about much, that most of these officers, you know, if they're on the Columbia River with 1,000 boats or they're out here in the ocean during the summer, they're there, but a majority of their time for a good part of the year is out in rural Oregon where there are no other enforcement officers. You know, there is no sheriff, there is no state police, there is no city officer. So while they're coming and going and their presence out there in some of those rural settings, has a very good effect of the presence of some type of enforcement, not only on the fish and wildlife laws, but the traffic and all the other things that they do when they're out there.
And just to again expand on the point that you're making, it is also important to the fish and wildlife budget that there be percentage of that budget made up of general funds so that those officers can stop and deal with traffic problems or stranded motorists or other things that they encounter during their day that aren't specifically related to wildlife management. I think your point's well taken. In the rural areas of the state where law enforcement is stretched very thin, these people perform a multitude of functions.
It wasn't infrequent for me to be out there 5 or 6 hours a day in a remote area. I'm the only guy on duty in Curry County. Nobody else was there.
Senator Shields.
Yeah, I appreciate that discussion, Mike.
They're going fishing there.
This one over that was
ready to Roy Heiner to
fish because that's where we're going.
I was probably going to mention an old friend of Representative Krieger's. I used to spend a fair amount of time with Roy Heider when he was around here. He used to be out in the...
He was quite an outlaw, do you know that?
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you, if I could tell you the Roy Heider story when he thought that this stuff I was putting in my chew one day... He couldn't figure out how...
I don't know if you want that on the record, sir.
Yeah, I really do, because he couldn't figure out how it was swollen. I was swallowing it. He said, I don't see how you do that. It was 3 years later before I told him it was raisins.
Okay.
Moving on to something that may be relevant to the budget.
That would be refreshing.
For the life of me, and this would be a question to the FNW, I look through the budget, and the money is all here by program and spread all over the place and so on. Is the aquaculture money in here somewhere and wherever? Is it here in one of these rank priorities?
Chair Morgan, Senator Shields, what do you mean by aquaculture money?
I'm talking about... In 99, we passed a law, I think it was 99, I don't remember the dates exactly, that said that we would take 10% of the fish money, you know, it's only, what, 700,000 or something, less than that, for fish farming in some areas of the state. And then I think the sunset was moved forward again. Maybe in 2001. I was just wondering where that money was, what kind of priority it gets, where it fits in the scheme of things in this.
Chair Morgan, Senator Shields, if you look at number 4, that's in hatchery production.
Okay. Okay, it wasn't mentioned there, so I just kind of wanted to know.
That's budgeted in the hatchery program.
Budgeted in at what level?
Chair Morgan, Senator Shields, I can't tell you the exact numbers today. There was a cut in the governor's recommended budget of that program, and I can't tell you the numbers off the top of my head today.
Okay.
We can get that information for you.
Let's bring that into the phase 2 part of the budget discussion. I think that would be good information.
Okay,
does anyone else have any questions or comments on the priority listing? With that, then, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5029, and that concludes the ranking. We've actually made it through the process, more or less in good shape. We have the schedule out for next week. We'll be back here on Monday doing a public hearing and possible work session on the Land Use Board of Appeals.
Okay. Just for clarification, to make sure that hopefully we're all on the same page, and I'm sure you probably are, certain members of this, the Legislative Assembly are very concerned about putting K-12 budget out before anything else goes out. And we've also discussed the possibility of getting some of these budgets sort of on the shelf, ready to roll. And I assume that's the way we're looking at this.
My understanding is that we have... I am not aware that we actually have the ability to move these budgets out at this point.
Well, we can get them right
aware that there's no discussion at this point to impanel the full committee to move the budgets beyond the subcommittee level.
Well, we could line a lot of these budgets. What I'm suggesting, and I think probably the same thing.
Same
Let's get everything lined up as best we can. Historically, we've fired these budgets, these small, smaller budgets out. But very important budgets, okay? And sort of clear the deck for what's coming next. But well, now we're going to hold these up on a shelf and just and then we can pop them out when we need to.
And we need to recognize that there is a tremendous amount of staff work that needs to go into actually getting these things bill ready.
Right.
And that we have to allow that process to move forward simply to not put any more of a burden on these great people than we already have. So I... my understanding of the discussions with the co-chairs are that we are simply in that part of the process and that moving these in terms of the full committee or the floor has not been part of the discussion.
And I'm glad we clarified that because I had the same discussion with our co-chair and I don't want to keep people with the wrong impression, but I think that we should look at these ones that we're putting on the shelf as pretty well completed budgets and we're not going to have to revisit them later on.
That is my extremely fervent hope.
Thank you.
And with that, if there's no further business before the committee, this meeting's adjourned. We'll see you.